Well, God's holy days, which are not commonly observed in the religious world, in fact, most people shy away from them, others outright reject them, but God's holy days illustrate his plan for mankind. They illustrate why he made the earth, why he created man, and what he intends for them. In the biblical holy days, there is a plan laid out, and it has to do with the harvest seasons. That's how the ancient people basically interpreted them. That's how they understood them, not realizing that there was an underlying message contained within the pattern of the biblical holy days. We understand them, that there is one group of them in the early part of the year, and there is another group, a more intensive group, in the latter part of the year, and the year being the growing season. It has to do with growth. It has to do with produce, something being produced from the earth. We think of edible vegetation. We think of crops. There are two harvests in the ancient world, and for that matter, the Apostle James talks about it, what was called the early and the latter rains. The early rains produced one crop, and then after a time, the latter rains set up and produced another. The spring holy days, of course, we realize, Passover, Days of Unleavened Bread, Pentecost, so on. The spring holy days focus on what we would call personal salvation. But the fall set is different. It reflects world salvation. There is a time when the world is going to have an opportunity that it doesn't presently have. Now, there is this issue of predestination. We've heard that term. Unfortunately, the Calvinist-type people have distorted greatly what that term means. We'll discuss it a little bit later on. But there are people who are destined to be called for the early harvest. Where does that leave the rest? Well, we can begin to understand where it leaves the rest when we understand the fall holy days. In John 6:44, there is this rather discomforting statement. John 6:44. It isn't often quoted in the mainstream, because it's rather disturbing. It says, no man can come to me except the Father which has sent me draw him, and I will raise him up in the last day. Well, if no man can accept that they're called of the Father, where does that leave the rest of humanity? Now, there's another clue here. It says, I will raise him up at the last day. We understand that to be a reference to the first resurrection. But we know there's another resurrection. But we'll work that into the picture a little later. That's in John 6:44. But if we go over a few pages to John 7:37, it seems to contradict that. And this is what the world focuses on. John 7:37, in the last day, that great day of the feast, Jesus stood and cried, saying, if any man thirst, let him come unto me and drink. He that believeth on me, as the scripture has said, out of his belly shall flow rivers of living water. Now, that seems to contradict the other. In John 6, it's talking about no man can come. Whereas in John 7, it's indicating that it's up to the individual. Anyone who wants to come can come. How do we reconcile those two? Well, let's understand something. John chapter 6 is related to the Passover season, the spring holy day season. You look back in verse 4 of that chapter, and the Passover, a feast of the Jews, was nigh. So this statement is relative to the lessons and the experience of the spring holy day season. That statement that no man can unless they're drawn to the Father is relevant to or related to the spring set of holy days. But in John 7, this is the last day of the Feast of Tabernacles. That's when the period of wide open opportunity, whosoever wills, that's the whosoever wills period. That's when that happens. So we can see the pattern there, that the biblical holy days are not so much about physical harvests. They're not so much about crops, although there's an illustration there. But the real point is the harvests, and I put that in the plural, the harvests of humanity. God has a plan where he intends to offer the opportunity for salvation to all who have ever lived. So that's the lesson we need to understand. In James 5:7, that's that reference that I sort of alluded to earlier, James 5:7. This kind of gives us the picture of where God is on all of this. In verse 7 it says, "Be patient therefore, brethren, unto the coming of the Lord. Behold, the husbandman waits for the precious fruit of the earth and has long patience for it until he receives the early and the latter rain." That's sort of explaining God's patience to wait for his plan to develop out, to walk through the seasons and the situations and the world conditions that he provides to train a contingent of people to be called into his family, the first contingent, the early rains or the early harvest, and secondly, another number later. And as we know, that number later is going to be vastly greater. Those called in the first harvest was a relatively small number, was intended to be. Revelation 22:17 is kind of a continuation of that whosoever wills comment. 22:17, "And the Spirit and the bride say, Come. And let him that hears say, Come. And let him that is athirst come. And whosoever will, let him take the water of life freely." Revelation 22:17 is spoken, we notice, after the second coming, which is a period of time that most people don't realize is not the end of the salvational period. There is another day after that. And that's the wide open opportunity expressed by the term whosoever wills. There's a hymn with that title. They don't realize the time frame of it. The bride and the Spirit are the ones making this offer. Well, we know that that would then explain that the point in time when this happens is after the marriage of the Lamb. So we know where we are time-wise with that statement. Isaiah 49:8 explains, Isaiah, "Thus saith the Lord," and this is the verse that people, and there's a repetition of it in the New Testament, this is the verse that people tend to use to suggest that there's only one day of salvation. If you're not saved now in this age, you're toast. That's what they want to teach. No, there's more to this story. "Thus saith the Lord, in an acceptable time, I have heard you, and in a day of salvation have I helped you, and I will preserve you, talking about being saved, and give you for a covenant of the people to establish the earth, to cause to inherit the desolate heritages. That you may say to the prisoners, go forth. To them that are in darkness, show yourselves, that they shall feed in the ways, and their pastures shall be in all high places. That's a wonderful passage. It says a lot of things. Have we noticed the inferences that are there? It's suggesting that he's calling a people who are going to be used to open the door to salvation to others, those who are prisoners of their spiritual environment, of their blindness, some of which is incurred by Satan, some of which God has deliberately left people in a state of blindness, because they're to be called at a different time. But the rest of this verse 9, go forth to them that are in darkness. Show yourselves. You're going to be showing them yourselves as spirit beings. Show yourselves. They shall feed in the ways. They're going to be brought along on the path to conversion. And their pastures shall be in all high places. Not the swamp of society like we know, but places where the truth is taught. Now the world refers to this, where in another place in the New Testament, where it talks about the day of salvation. It isn't the day of salvation, it's a day. There is a day of salvation right now, but it's not the only one. There's another one to come. So that's important to understand. And that's in 2 Corinthians 6, 2, if you want to look at it. But I think you know what that says. Colossians 2, 17. This is talking about the biblical holy days. Start in verse 16. Let no man, therefore, judge you in meat or drink, or in respect of an holy day, or of the new moon, or of the Sabbath. People are going to judge you on the basis of those things. It says, don't let any man judge you. The world would look at that and say, this is why we don't need to keep these things. They miss the point entirely. It's saying, don't let other people discourage you, judge you, badmouth you for your observance of these things. And the important verse is verse 17, which explains these holy days, these new moons, these Sabbaths are a shadow of things to come, which is another way of saying they are an outline of future events. That's telling us that the biblical holy days are an outline of prophetic events that are key to what God is doing. So God's biblical holy days illustrate the plan. Now, let's shift focus a little bit. Let's focus on our experience, our calling, what is expected of us right now. We're not talking about the world anymore. Let's go back to that early harvest period. It's a thing called, I'm going to call it, and I'm going to misuse the term as far as the world is concerned, but I'm going to use it what I think is correctly, a term of predestination. You've heard that term. Like I say, the Calvinists, those who think like that, and that Calvinism has crept into many Protestant religion denominations. But I want to use the term predestination to express another idea. The fact that some people are destined to be called earlier. There's some predestined to be called early. There are some predestined to be called later. It is their assignment. We could call the others post-destination if you want. But predestined are those people who are the John 6:44 people, those who God has called, who he intends become converted now. Now those people, they may think they have a choice. They may think they can take it or leave it. That may be a bad misconception on their part. Because if the Father has called you, and the Son has given himself for you, and you have responded, at least to some degree, your options aren't the same as someone who is in ignorance that doesn't know. Okay? We are called out of this world. We're called to be not like this world. In John 15:19, Jesus told his disciples, and that applies to us as well, John 15:19, where he says, if you were of this world, the world would love his own. But because you are not of the world, but I have chosen you out of the world, therefore, the world hates you. This is what we're going to find if we respond to God's call as he intends. In John 18:36, a few pages over, 18:36, and this is important to realize. Jesus answered, my kingdom is not of this world. Don't expect this world to be the environment where we would be living his way. The world is not going to accept true Christianity, whether it's expressed in action or whether it's expressed verbally. The world is going to reject, it's going to react negatively to the truth. It's a mindset. We could say humanity is pre-programmed to reject the things of God. If anything can be said of them, they are post-destined. They are destined to be called, but it's a matter of the appropriate time. And that's what we need to understand. We'll be talking a little bit about that on the last day. But let's realize that God's kingdom, Christ's kingdom, is not of this world. Don't look for it here. It isn't here. We may have a person or two or a group here or there that believes the truth, that accepts the truth, that is truly converted. But that's not society in general. In John 15:16, back to where we just were, this is important to realize, and it sort of speaks to our obligation. 15:16. I'm going to start in verse 15. Henceforth, I call you not servants. And this is telling us those people God has called are at a level above the average church worshiper. I call you not servants, for the servant knows not what his Lord does. But I have called you friends. For all things that I have heard of my Father, I have made known to you. Those people that God has called, that he has made servants, understand in depth the things that the religious world in general, or for that matter, the secular world, cannot begin to fathom. Verse 16, you have not chosen me. But I have chosen you and ordained you that you should go and bring forth fruit, and that your fruit should remain, that whatsoever you shall ask of the Father in my name, he may give it you. The fact that we have been chosen says something, that we have an obligation not just to respond, but to produce And he tells us that he's going to give us the power to be fruitful. You should go and bring forth fruit, and that your fruit should remain. This is the kind of fruit that's lasting. It's worth something. Worth something to him. That whatsoever you shall ask of the Father in my name, he may give it you. He's going to enforce, reinforce, under support what we do in his name by the power of his Spirit. God is aware of our actions. He knows what we are obligated to do. We need to ask ourselves, what does conversion involve? It isn't just believing that Jesus is Lord. That's as far as some people go. That's far enough for them. With the calling that they have, that's perhaps all that's appropriate. But those people who are truly called of the Father, we have to ask, what does conversion involve? It is a complete change of mind and nature. It affects who we are, not just what we do. All of us occupy just a moment in this envelope that we call space and time. We're only here for a moment. We have a day in which we can work, and it's important that we do work. James 4:14 kind of gives us a picture. James 4:14. Verse 14 says, whereas you know not what shall be on the morrow. You don't know what's coming. We don't know what's ahead. It can be all over for any one of us at any time. We don't know. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. Now we know that. But somehow we don't keep it in the forefront of our mind that life is short. No, life is short. I remember thinking when I was in my late teens, I couldn't imagine being alive in the year 2000. I said, I'll be 55. That's unfathomable. Last I looked, it was 25 years ago. Still at it. So are we all. But we need to use the time that we have, because we only have a little time. We're told in Ephesians 5, verse 16, and Colossians 4, verse 5, that we need to redeem the time. We need to redeem the time. Buy back every moment. Make it worthwhile. Make it useful. And if we can make it useful to God, all the better. A couple of reminders. And this was known from ancient times. Let's go back to Job 33, verse 4. Or for sake of time, I will just read it here. Where he says, the Spirit of God has made me, and the breath of the Almighty has given me life. We are not our own. We were made for a purpose. And in Psalm 146, verse 4, his breath goes forth. Speaking of the average person, his breath goes forth. He returns to his earth. In that very day, his thoughts perish. What we want is for our thoughts and our actions and our fruits in life to be of use to God, because that is the kind of person that he is going to need to staff the positions in his coming kingdom.